Yeah, before we go into the details or some details of the Linux audio architecture, I'd like to introduce Paul Davis, who will give a view onto the bigger picture of the of Linux audio. Paul has done a lot of, has been active in a lot of areas of Linux audio development. He has contributed to the advanced Linux audio sound architecture, ALSA. He has written drivers for RME cards, and most importantly, he is currently developing the Jack Audio Connection Kit, which will be shown later in all its beauty. And then he's also working on the Ardour audio workstation, recording workstation. So. You might take the headphone then.
The headphone is there.
Is there any volume there? Can you hear me okay? So, just here we are. It's really great to see the faces attached to so many email addresses that I've come to know over the last few years. Well, I guess it's good to open up a meeting like this to ask, why are we here? And I guess I'm here today because I actually want to meet people and talk about Linux audio software development. When you write software in a studio attached to the back of your house alone for 3 years, it can be a kind of a lonely experience, and it's always quite nice to get out and meet other people who are doing exactly the same thing as you. But why are we involved in Linux audio software development? Well, I'm involved in it because I want to make music, although I haven't done any of that for 3 years because I've been too busy writing software. I'm also involved in it because I want other people to make music. One of the most exciting emails I got along the way about the work I've been doing on Ardour was from a guy who builds computers for musicians in Africa and is interested in using Ardour out there, where there's just no way that they can justify paying for Windows or Cubase or anything else. And the idea of helping other people to make music without having to get locked into proprietary solutions is very appealing to me, and I imagine it's appealing to quite a lot of you as well. I'm here because I want source code. I want source code for everything that I run. It's probably within limits, but I also want to be able to learn. It's one of the best experiences of working on Linux audio software has been the extent to which I can read other people's code and figure out how things work. The challenge of writing a digital audio workstation when there isn't any other software out there, at least there wasn't when I began, that does what Ardour does, has been really quite immense. If you compare it with the challenge of running a web server, for which there are lots of little bits of example code floating around all over the place, the digital audio workstation turned out to be essentially a whole new beast. And I would like to avoid people going through that process again and being able to learn from work that's already happened. I also want other people to work on my software, which is one of the big benefits of the way that the development process has happened so far. I want to work on other people's software a little bit, not that much. I want stability, and I also want an operating system that is transparent, where I don't have to be wondering why does it do this or why doesn't that work. I at least can go in and find out, even if some other people cannot. I hope everybody here has their own answers to why they're here. I also want to say, obviously, that I'm here by the kind invitation of ZKM, and I wanted to thank Frank and Matthias, as I'm sure we'll need to do at the end of this meeting, for arranging this whole session. I think it's a historic event. Let's take a quick survey of where we've been. You only have to go back, I think probably even 2 or certainly 3 years, and Linux audio was dominated at that time by the OSS API. Virtually every application that was written was just handling 16-bit interleaved stereo audio, which is still pretty useful, but a rather narrow view of the world. The only substantial audio software that we had at that point was anything more than, say, a CD player or a sound file player was the jazz sequencer, which, although interesting, I always found incredibly buggy and hard to use. We had the OSS Dev Sequencer model, which is possibly one of the worst APIs ever foisted on Linux. And we had clicks, and more clicks, and then some more clicks, and a few more clicks. We were also back in the days before Ingo Molnar and Andrew Morton did their magnificent work on the kernel to try to help us out with the latency issues that we were facing. We basically had an operating system that was even worse than Windows at handling real-time audio. We've moved on a little bit since then, in the sense that there are a number of things that I think we could legitimately say are done. I think the audio media players like XMMS, ALSA Player, and the hundreds that you can probably find on Fresh Meat these days, that's pretty much taken care of. There may be issues surrounding installation that still exist, people knowing what the right tools are. But those programs are written, and they work, and they do just as good a job as their Windows and Mac counterparts. I think that all the web plugins for standard formats, we obviously still don't have QuickTime and the other things from macOS, but the web plugins are there. We have CD players, rippers. We have a huge database that we can access that sort of follows the Linux philosophy. I was amazed the other week I put in an incredibly obscure CD by some Bulgarian women's group from a small village in Bulgaria, and the track listing was already in freedb.org. It's quite bizarre. CD recording, well, you know, CD record has been around for a while. It's a little crusty in places, but it gets the job done. And we also have lots of P2P services for trading all those legal and sometimes illegal files. But I think it's worth noting that you still cannot take an arbitrary PC off the shelf, put Linux on it, and do audio and MIDI work. And in fact, with a lot of the systems you might try that on, you might not get any sound at all. People who know what they're doing can fix it, but it certainly is a long way from the situation that people face if they sit down in front of a Windows machine. So we have some work to do there. So what are we up to right now? I'm sure everybody here has their own favorites and projects they're working on. This isn't even a complete list of my favorites, but I just thought I'd mention some particular highlights that I think are going on right now. I think most people in the room are probably familiar with all these. I think they all represent really, you know, significant chunks of work that really bring real functionality to people who want to do audio and MIDI on Linux. And I think we shouldn't overlook the significance of having apps like this, if not finished, then certainly emerging and under development. I think it's something we can feel very proud of, and we can feel pretty confident about the future. And there are lots more that, you know, I haven't mentioned on this list. But at the same time, I was wondering what we're doing. I think we need to go over and ask, what are the proprietary guys doing right now? I think, having just been at NAMM in LA a few weeks ago, my main comment would be they're involved in lots of the same. You know, minor tweaks to the editor of this digital audio workstation, some new drum machine model, you know, it's just a lot of stuff to convince people to buy more stuff. Most of them are making very serious efforts to move up to, if not 96 kilohertz, then all the way up to 192. And this is something that in the Linux community we haven't really paid a lot of attention to. I think a lot of the software that we write is somewhat sample rate neutral, but there's not a lot of audio software for Linux I know right now that will work well at 96, and I don't know any that will do anything particularly useful at 192, at least not real time. They're making toys for the electro techno crowd, which I presume sell reasonably well and probably get downloaded even more frequently than they sell. They're wrapping up things that you can prototype in Reactor and C-Sound with nice GUIs. A good example of that is Cantor, which came out recently, which you could easily simulate, you can easily implement, probably in PD or in JMAX or in Reactor or C-Sound, but whoever bought that out, and I think it was Antares, have taken something that would have been a rather hard and clunky to use patch and turned it into something with a very easy to use GUI, where it now becomes an instrument rather than an experiment. And that's a trend that I think is already been underway for a year or two, and I think it's going to keep going. They're making a lot more use of FFTs. They're doing groove control and beat slicing. VST Link is another interesting development in that world, which hasn't really been opened up yet. Everything is going to surround. How much of this is just marketing and how much of it is actually useful technical shifts, I don't know. I personally think it's mostly marketing, but there's a lot of work on hardware control surfaces. And then at the end, I mentioned two things that we are sort of vaguely involved in, which is the effort that was begun at NAMM to develop a cross-platform unified plug-in interface. This was initiated by Ron Cooper of Cakewalk, and there's a discussion mailing list that I'm on, I know Steve is on, there may be some other people in the room who are on it, that you know does yield some hope of coming up with a new plug-in interface that will be owned by a non-proprietary organization and will run on every platform. And then finally, we also have rumors of Steinberg already having ported their flagship products to Linux, which I think is a very important thing to take note of. Those companies have always said that they're interested in Linux, but they're not really that interested in being the first company to jump in and announce that they actually have stuff ready to go. I think that interest is real, and I think at the moment most of it's not very visible. I want to talk for a moment in terms of the future about a proprietary program, which I think that we can learn an awful lot from. Most of you who are on any of the mailing lists I'm on know that I don't run Windows, but I do have friends who do. And I actually let them, too. It's kind of shameful. It's not shameful at all. Halion, when I've seen it, has just struck me as a really remarkable program. You know, when you first sit down on a Macintosh, which I remember doing back in about 1985 or something, and I didn't read the manual, I had no idea how to use this sort of mouse thing that was attached to it, and it was just immediately obvious. And Halion struck me as a program that has taken that same experience and applied it to samplers, and particularly to disk-based samplers. It really is incredible how you can sit down with it, and I've just found so many aspects of the GUI that are just completely intuitive in terms of how you use it. And you can also get a hell of a lot done with it. As far as I know, we don't have anything like this under development for Linux. The only sampler projects I know of are still, you know, very primitive right now. And although I think there's a lot of room in the world for, you know, much more experimental interfaces on software than something like Halion represents, I also think that we can learn an awful lot from the quality that has gone into building an interface for this. I really believe that we're moving towards a point with Linux audio software where building stuff like this is becoming very easy now. I think if you have a look at Essie Tapple's Freak Tweak and Martin DeBoer's Tapir, you know, coming up with programs like that now, you probably spend a lot more time writing the interface for it than almost anything else. And that means that we need to be thinking carefully about what interfaces should look like. And although there's always going to be a place for the more experimental programs that things like C-Sound and JMAX and PD provide, there also needs to be a place for programs that are as well integrated as Halion is. So where are we actually going at the moment? What's happening right now? Well, you know, we have a lot of issues with APIs. Which API should somebody use to write a new piece of audio software? It's a subject of a lot of controversy. It's there's no clear answers at the moment, and I think that represents really a major sticking point for the development of Linux audio. Once you've got an API, once we're talking about somewhat more sophisticated applications, there are issues to do with transport control and synchronization that we haven't really fully worked out, and we don't really have good analogs to look to in the proprietary world either to figure out how to do it. Plug-in GUIs, everybody who knows anything about LADSPAR knows that this has always been a big problem with LADSPAR, and how we solve it, whether we solve it, when we solve it is all completely unclear right now. There are lots of programs out there that are really interesting and really cool, but they still haven't reached 1.0 yet, Arda being an obvious candidate, but there are many others. It's a big question when people can expect to see binary releases, stable releases, things that will really work and impress and help users. System configuration is still a nightmare. Anyone who read the /.noise, as I think Dave put it, from the announcement of this meeting, you know, the complaints about just setting up a computer that plays sound under Linux, it's not necessarily the job of the user, but when the distributions don't do it, it becomes the user's job, and the users don't like it. And I don't blame them, because it's really quite horrendous. I mean, once you have a system set up, you tend to forget how many tweaks had to be done in order to get things to work. And then, of course, there's documentation, which we don't have very much of. There's some good stuff, but we really don't have anywhere near enough. I also wanted to mention the OS X factor, which I think has changed the landscape of what we're doing rather a lot. Because when I started working on Linux audio, we could make some pretty bold claims about Linux, at least certainly after Ingo Molnar's low latency patches came out. You know, we had much better latency, we were massively more stable, blah, 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 blah. But OS X now does all the same stuff. And so Linux is no longer in this position of being the only hope for a desktop operating system that can do the job that people doing audio need to be done. We're not the only stable operating system, we're not the only low latency operating system, and even though it's a relatively new operating system, you can be pretty much sure that every major audio program that exists right now will soon be available for OS X. And I think that really changes the landscape quite a bit. The move towards Linux is not as inevitable as it once was, because I think OS X does represent a much more viable platform for many people. On the other hand, OS X is a lot like Linux internally. It's based on BSD to some extent. It's a Unix system. It has a lot of POSIX support. And so in theory, you know, it should be relatively easy to port Linux software to OS X. It might be possible to do it in the other direction. They also don't have jack. And by jack, I don't really mean all of jack, but they don't have inter-application audio routing. And at the moment, that's something that we have a small foot up, although we may ourselves help them to fix that. And I think lastly, that for people like myself who are, you know, in the longer term, hoping to find some way to raise money by doing this kind of work, OS X might offer an area where we can port our software and sell it to an audience that is actually used to paying for software, which is not true in the Linux world at all. So, the future. I'm repeating something that I remember Dave describing quite eloquently and viscerally in the Frenzy last year. If you go back and look at the early world of audio and MIDI software, it was very diverse. There were lots of one, two-person companies writing little MIDI sequencers and plug-in effects and all kinds of things, often quite amateurish, but, you know, hundreds of applications in many cases. Within a few years, that all vanished and all changed, and instead, the whole sector is dominated by just a few companies, and really the only area where you can still survive as independent is writing plugins. And there are some plugin companies that do make a living being a small software house doing that kind of stuff. But you know, there's really essentially no independent host applications in the proprietary world. So we have to ask the question as we look to the future. What happens if the big guys do come to Linux? What happens if Steinberg does announce Nuendo for Linux next month? what happens if Digi Design suddenly realized that Linux makes a much better platform for their stuff than Windows does. Seems incredibly unlikely, but I don't think that we really know. There are two obvious possibilities. One of which, to quote from the author, or to paraphrase the author of Freeverb, "Oops, we seem to have single-handedly wiped out an entire market segment. We are triumphant. All of these proprietary companies fade into the sidelines, and our wonderful open-source collaborative model takes over." Or it turns out that we're just another bunch of hobbyists, like all of the early MIDI programmers for Mac OS. They're all gone, and if they're not gone, they all work for Steinberg or Cakewalk, and you have no idea who they are. Of course, you know, there's no way to know which of these two is going to be true. I think this meeting is a wonderful step in trying to, you know, get some sense of the direction that we're going in. And I think all we can say for right now is that, you know, we've seen everything except the future. I hope in the next 2 days that the talks that happen and the discussions that happen before, after, and maybe even during them will be as interesting as some of the conversations I've had already. And I welcome everyone to this workshop, conference, meeting, and I hope we have a great time. Thank you.
So there's a few more minutes left for questions to you. If there are questions, then I'd like to raise your hand and give the microphone so this is also heard out in the internet. Any questions? Yep, just a second.
I'm really loud.
I was just kind of curious, Paul. Do you have a particular sound editor that you think shows a kind of best of trends in audio software right now, Linux audio software?
My impression, I don't use them an awful lot. My sense is that at the moment they all have different and rather complementary strengths. SND is an incredible sound editor, but it's large and fairly complex, and often, as you've observed yourself, Dave, you know, to do very basic editing operations in it is not that intuitive. I like Sweep quite a lot, which I find for doing simple tail cutting and stuff, it's extremely fast to start up and so forth. And Audacity has lots of wonderful features. Some of the other programs I didn't list are also very good. At the moment, I don't see any of them really leaping out and saying, I'm it. I think all of them are evolving in specific kinds of ways and directions. And I think, you know, if you look at the Windows and Mac worlds, there isn't a single perfect sound editor there either. You know, some people think that Cool Edit is great. Some people think WaveLab is it. Some people think SoundForge is the right tool. And I think we're going to have much the same situation. I think we have a good pool of candidates to keep evolving and improving in those ways. I don't think any of them are rising head and shoulders above the others right now.
One other quick question for you, Paul. You mentioned that the 2.6 kernel either will or does support a POSIX clock.
Yeah.
Can you maybe shed a little light as to what that means?
I'm going
to
talk about that a little bit more in the talk that I do tomorrow.
Okay.
So we'll cover that then.
Okay, any more questions? One question from my side. In one of your slides, you said that macOS 10 gives people the choice to port their applications to a platform which is more likely that people will buy software for it.
Mm-hmm.
Will this include Ardo?
It's certainly possible. Some people in the room already know probably that Stefan Letts has successfully got Jack running on OS X. That is really the major obstacle to porting Ardo to OS X. If Jack is running, then you can pretty much guarantee that Ardo will run too. I'm sure it would need a few tweaks, but essentially all the pieces are there. And the thought has certainly crossed my mind that just from a business model perspective, from what I'm doing, it would be an interesting thing to do. Mm-hmm. So I can't see myself doing that at all. I don't have a Mac, and I don't want to spend a lot of time sitting at a friend's house doing it. But I can't see any obvious obstacles once Stefan has Jack working correctly to porting Ardo to OS X.
Okay. questions, anyone? Last chance for now. Okay, then, thank you, Paul. We'll have the next talk by Takashi Iwai on ALSA starting at 3 p.m. in about 20, 25 minutes. Until then, you can, for instance, have some small snacks outside. Before you leave, I have a very short question for the audience, just to get a figure. I'd like you to raise hands. How many of you are students and come here because they use Linux for some reason? It's about, looks like 10. How many do you come from kind of commercial companies that write, for instance, Windows applications? 1, 2, 3? Oh, not bad. And the rest is, I guess, the participants of this meeting. Okay, thank you, and we'll continue at 3 p.m. Thank you.